The following is an interview with Mildred Stiles Brunson by Flagey Nally and Mary Height for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The name of our project is Prohibition in Nelson County, the Causes and Effects. The interview is conducted in Louisville, Kentucky, Jefferson County, on February 6, 1989. Mildred, we need some information on your background, if you wouldn't mind, to give us your mother's name again.
My mother was Elizabeth Wood Croon.
And your father?
My father was Hugh Dunlap Stiles.
Was he a Bardstown native?
Over in the Maud area.
And that was Washington County, was it?
Well, Washington County after you cross the river right there. Mm-hmm. But Nelson County on this side of the river.
And can you give us a little of your educational background, Mildred?
Well, we lived in Danville, Kentucky, and I started school in the first grade in the fall, and then we moved to Bardstown when I was 6 years old in January of 1910. And I enrolled in Bardstown Graded School. My two brothers took me up to school, and at that time, Mr. Ernest Fulton was principal of the high school. And Miss Mary Gohagan taught the first and second grade, as she did for many years. And my father bought the place 2 miles from Bardstown, where Margaret and Elisha Hayden now live. And it was formerly owned by old Mr. Bev Grigsby, and who owned the big green house in Bardstown later, and his wife lived much longer. She was a Willis from Shelbyville. And anyway, my father bought that house from him. It's 214 acres. 200 acres on that side of the road, 14 acres on this side of the road. And everybody knew it as the house for the playhouse. Mm-hmm. And so then I went to school there until I was in the 8th grade, and my two brothers had gone off to college. And so I went to boarding school up at Danville the year I was in the 8th grade, and down at Russellville at Logan College, and we call them colleges in those days. They had 4 years of high school and 2 of college. And I went down there 2 years. And while I was down there, the first year I was at Danville, they had the year before, they had the terrible Shepherdsville wreck.
Was that 1918
or 17? Yeah, 17. I think it was 17. And when so many Bardstown people were killed, and we lived out there on the Bloomfield Road, so Mr. Nat Muir and his wife, who was a Shadburn from California, and their only son, George Shadburn Muir, they were all killed in that Shepherdsville wreck. So that Siggert House, we call it now, my father sold it to Miss Siggert, that was put up for sale at auction. And my father was going to move to town, and so that he did. And we moved there then in whatever year, can't remember. And then I went to Bardstown High School, my second, third, and fourth years, and graduated up Bardstown High School. And Mr. Lockett was principal then.
You moved around.
Yeah.
You didn't go to college.
Yes,
in
I
those
did.
Days. You did.
Yes, I did.
All right.
I went down to Bowling Green to Western Kentucky College at that time. It later became the university. And I went down there 2 years. I graduated from high school in 1923. And I went down there 2 years, and I married in May of 25.
Did they offer an associate degree then?
No, they didn't. I was so in love, and I mm-hmm. wasn't interested in getting an education. I thought you were supposed to have a good time, and that I did.
I think they still have a good time down there.
I think they do too.
All right, Mary, do we need any more information? Can you tell me your brothers? You speak of your brothers.
My brothers.
Yes.
Ogden Stiles was named Ogden Willett Stiles for my father's father. That was his full name. And Ogden was born just up the hill from Maud as you go to Springfield. My father built mother a new house over there on that hill. We went back last October, it's still there. Ogden was born there, and then we moved to Springfield, to that place there on the Mackville Road, and we didn't get possession of the house until the 1st of January, and they had to give possession of the farm where they were, they had sold it, so they moved into the cabin, which was right in the yard back of the big house. And Robert Stiles was born the 12th of December in, I was 5 years. Ogden was born in 95 and Robert in 98, I believe. And we always teased Robert, he was born in the cabin there. And then they moved in the big house and I was born there in June of 1904.
So it's Ogden?
Ogden Willard Stiles and Robert Hugh Stiles.
There were three of you then, three children.
And mother had lost a little girl in the meantime, just 6 months old.
Well, can we bring you up to 1920?
1920, well,
into the
yes.
beginning of Prohibition as it happened on the 20th of January of that year in Nelson County.
1920.
Now, you were how old?
Well,
were...
I was born in 1904, so I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
And we were living there at the Sigger place on the corner of 5th and Fred J. And it's still there now. Bobby Hearst just sold it a few years or so ago.
Shadow Lawn, they call it.
Shadow Lawn. Yes. The Siggers named it Shadow Lawn. And it was a real show place in Bardstown. Still is.
It is.
And then I don't remember about them voting Prohibition out. But I remember the bootleg era and people, and then the whiskey that was stored in the warehouses, and we had Tom Moore Distillery down there under the hill, and we had Withrow Distillery, which is out Withrow Lane and later became known as Shawhan Distillery. And of course we had Early Times Distillery when I was an old girl. And we didn't have this tax-paid whiskey that was so important then. And in the fall, you'd go by the distillery and Mr. Jack Beam, who was Barbara Boblett's grandfather, that where Barbara got all her money, Mr. Jack Beam, when you went by the distillery, they'd just give you, don't you want a bottle of whiskey? And they were in quarts then. And my father would have me stop the drugstore and get a little box about that big square and that tall of rock candy. And he'd put it in the bottle of whiskey and shake it up and sit on the mantel by the clock. And when he'd be out in the winter tending to the stock, he always had cold feet, bless his heart, why he'd come in and sit down by the fire to bake his feet, and he'd shake that up and just take a swallow out of it, and it'd sit there on the... I grew up with whiskey in the house, but it was never abused. And when I was a teenager and would have a pain in my sawdust, mother would say, I'll fix you a little toddy. And she'd mix a little sugar and water and a spoonful of whiskey and maybe a little lemon juice if she had it, and to warm me up inside. And I think about, like many other things, like food. A lot of us abuse food, but we can't outlaw it. And I don't think we can have prohibition against many things. Now, like tobacco, when I hear them talk about it, it's silly. But anyway, we live there at the Sugar Place, and people started making their own moonshine, the copper stills. And then they started stealing whiskey out of the warehouses. And they had guards that walked around the warehouses all night. And so, I know this firsthand, Mr. Jordan Hall, who was Miss Emily Hall's father, and they lived right down there, almost opposite where Ms. Wheat, Ms. Dr. Wheat lives now. That little
South Third Street?
The other street that goes this way, is it Muir Avenue?
Yes.
Same street.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's right down there next to where the Goat Laundry is, I think. Yeah. Next house, Miss Emily lived there, and Mr. Hall. And I remember Miss Hall was one of the guards. And I remember a businessman in Bardstown telling me, now he was one guard that could not be bought off. No way. But they, the people that were stealing the whiskey out of the warehouses, and I don't know how they would do, but run it out of the barrels down some way. And when the guard left this corner to go to walk way down yonder, why, they get up in the warehouse and do this. And, of course, a lot of the guards looked the other way, but I remember this man that was doing this. He said, now, Mr. Jordan Hall was one man. There was no way you could buy him off.
Well, was but he a federal agent?
No, just a
he
local,
was just hired.
Just a local man.
I see.
To guard the distillery, to guard the whiskey that was in the warehouses.
Well, what happened to those warehouses and all that whiskey?
Well, it finally, during the Prohibition, doctors could give a prescription for half a pint of whiskey, and you take a teaspoonful with sugar and water every 4 hours. And there was a doctor, must I name names?
Yes.
There was a Dr. Pitt that moved to Bardstown, and he had an office over in the Oakley building now, but up in there, and he was known to give prescriptions, and just for a regular office call. And, of course, they were very much in demand.
Well, was there any other medicine out that you can remember?
I don't.
In a drugstore, there's such.
Had a call, Geritol hadn't come out
hadn't come,
then.
That's right. And had aspirin?
Oh, I'm sure we had aspirin.
Just barely.
Yeah. Uh-huh. When I was about 11 or 12, I had 3 mastoid operations. And that's why I know Louisville so well. I stayed down at Old St. Joseph's on 4th Street 2 months without going home, and then I came back to Louisville on the Bardstown train every Wednesday and Saturday for one whole year. And we had all day to kill because we couldn't get my ear treatment and get back on that next train. We had to stay all day, so that's the reason I know Louisville so well.
That's wonderful.
People now just marvel that I can go downtown by myself. Of course, it's changed considerably. But anyway, about the whiskey. Now, Mother says that those trucks rumbled by all night. Now, where they've gotten the whiskey, I don't know. But someplace that I'm sure wasn't legal, or maybe it was moonshine. Well, occasionally, the prohibition officer and Big Six Henderson was one of the main prohibition officers, and I think he let the chips fall where they may. Everybody knew Big Six. And then, of course, if they'd see a little smoke over yonder in the hill, they'd know there was a moonshine still. And I guess, depending on who it was, they would raid it and cut up the still, and so they couldn't make whiskey again until the next week when they get it all assembled again in another location.
Well, do you remember many arrests?
Oh, yes, occasionally. One night, my brother Ogden Stiles was coming to Louisville, and he had a little Essex with red wire wheels, and we lived there at the cigar place, and Ogden was quite a man around town. And he was delivering some whiskey to Louisville, somebody, and the prohibition officers. Now, a lot of them were paid off. They recognized your card, and you just had a standing payoff with them, I suppose. And so, one night, Ogden was coming to Louisville, and they arrested him. And he and his wife, who was Lacey Hinkle, were staying down to our house, sugar place. So Ogden didn't come home, so Lacey hurried down the door Sunday morning, and so-and-so, he gave a fictitious name, but a name she would know, and had been arrested by a prohibition officer with two or three kegs, small kegs of whiskey in the trunk of his car. And then one night up at Danville, Ogden was up there for a dance, and I don't know whether he was drinking or whether he did a traffic violation, but they pulled him over, and I don't know whether he had whiskey in his car or whether he was drinking or what, but I remember so well Ogden saying, there I was sitting in jail in a tuxedo. He had been up at Danville to a dance. And now my mother always said, mother had all this family scandal in her scrapbook. And mother said, somebody said, why, Miss Stiles, you don't mean that you put this in there. Mother said, if people don't want to be talked about, let them pay themselves.
Hey,
so
she was a modern woman.
Like it is. And so, but prohibition, and I remember a man in Byrdstown, I'm not going to call his name, but he was one of them that was stealing whiskey out of the warehouse, and he was telling me about it, and he became very prosperous all of a sudden, and he had a red Buick, and I was only one of the girls that, because we had two or three cars at home, and I was only one of the girls who would let drive his car. And it's when Byrdstown baseball team was in its heyday, and they play at Elizabethtown on a Sunday and a Monday, and Glasgow a Sunday and Monday, and Harrodsburg a Sunday and Monday, and the whole town just closed up. That's another thing that we ought to have on tape. You know, I was at Byrdstown last year, and were you up at Leonard Barrier's for that recording session? Well, they had two recorders in the great room, one down here and one down here. And I just told a lot of this local color, and I have told them over and over that they're going to be so sorry that this isn't on record, a lot of these things that were in Byrdstown.
You're right.
But I don't know any way to do it. I never get tired of talking. The old man next door calls me Wendy. Says she never stops talking.
Oh.
Now, but prohibition, and so this man, and it happened, he was a Catholic. And he and I could discuss religion. And before you leave, I might tell you it was, but we don't need to put it on record. And so we would, and I was a Methodist, and we would talk, and he would tell me. And I said, what are you doing about stealing this whiskey? Well, he said, Mildred, I don't know who it belongs to. Different people, you see, own this whiskey, and what they call the warehouse receipts. They collected payment, I guess, for storage. I don't know how all that worked. But anyway, and I said, what do you do about confessing that? He said, well, I talked to the priest about it, but said, I don't know who I'm stealing it from. But he needed to steal it.
So because he didn't know the source, he felt
Catholics
okay?
See, like us Methodists, you know, we just
rationalize.
Yes, sir. And there's nothing like rationalizing about something. So, but anyway, it's too bad. And you can't prohibit something, you know.
Not really.
Just can't
you
do
cannot
it.
Force morals, can
no,
you?
No, sir. No way.
Well, how were the churches? What stands were they taking? Did you hear a lot of preaching about it in there?
No. No, I didn't. Now, of course, the Methodists are strictly against whiskey. And my nephew says, craziest thing there was, I was down with him in church in Baton Rouge one Sunday, and they want everybody to sign a pledge that they wouldn't touch a drop of whiskey. H.D. said, well, they're crazy. I said, I'm not going to sign any such thing. And you see, it's like everything else. It can be abused, and as I said, I grew up with it in the house, and the man in charge of the dining room here is a big fellow, and he was the Lutheran minister. And he teased me about those heavenly hills out there. I said, Wes, I was the only woman in Nelson County that didn't drink. So, and at Christmas, we'd have custard on the table, and Mother would say, does anybody want a spoonful of whiskey in the custard? And you reach in the cupboard and set the bottle out, and somebody take a teaspoonful and put in their cup of custard, you know. But it's too bad that we can't do things in moderation. But if people, many things, you all getting into this history, I don't imagine you have much moderation about it. I bet you've gone off the deep end about this.
We're trying to be moderate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all right. Now, what else you want to know?
Well, what about the climate of the town? Did everybody just accept that it was shut down, but that it would go on anyway? Was it illegal but legal?
I remember well when it was repealed and everybody went to Cincinnati to get beer. The day that they could sell it, they had it made, you see. But they took trucks, and my brother, Ogden Stiles, had opened the old Kentucky Home Sweet Shop, which is there where Lawson's restaurant was on the corner on the alley where Mr. Dobbs had the shoe store. That was Lawson's restaurant. And Mrs. Thayer Lawson and Hugo Lawson ran it. And they kept a big round glass thing, and they kept ham sandwiches made up on buns. I can see them now. We'd go in there and buy them. And then the next store, which was later Bear's, Ogden built the sweet shop there. And it was called the Old Kentucky Home Sweet Shop. And I think he opened it about, Mother had the full page ad, it was in the Standard, about in 1922, I think. And then later they built the big gymnasium back of that where they had the dances, the Sweet Shop Gym. But I remember, I'm sure Ogden had that open when beer came in.
Well, that would have been in the 30s, when beer was back in again, the repeal.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure he had it that long. I don't know who he sold it to. I've forgotten that little era. I let Ogden die without finding out several things I needed to know. One or two, a little scandal. But we had lots of it.
Bardstown was full of it, but it never did stop it or change it. Did it? Kept going on.
It just kept going on.
Well, what did you think, as you got older and people continued to do this illegal practice?
Yeah.
Did you take exception with that, or did you just begin to accept it?
No, just accept it.
Uh-huh.
A preacher here in Louisville had this. I've tried to remember this verse, and he talked about Sunday before last, and I meant to call up and get him at the Southeast Christian Church. Brother Bob Russell, he's just a whiz, and I hear him every Sunday on radio. And he said this, first you abhor it, and then you endure it, and then you embrace it. And I think today that this is the way we do. Something you don't approve of, it's just terrible, and then you decide, well, maybe it isn't so bad, and then you embrace it.
And that was the way it was.
I think that was the way people did about whiskey, and people had their moonshine stills, and they'd tell about who made the best moonshine, and they'd put it in these charred kegs. And the mill down in Bardstown was selling all the meal and sugar to make this moonshine.
So they were in on it.
And that was where Mr. Keith made his money, Maxine Keith's father and Paul Keith's father.
Did they own the mill at that time?
Yes, he did. He came there from someplace and bought the mill and supplied the moonshiners with their sugar and their meal and their, I guess, yeast.
Well, at this time then, the fortunes changed. Those that had a lot of money in the legal business lost a lot, and others that took up the illegal business
I guess so.
Got rich. Can you tell us any particular family that suffered tremendous lot in having been, you know, in the ownership, lost, and so forth?
No, I remember.
There was no dramatic?
I remember that the Tom Burton distillery now was Mr. Tom Moore. And I remember one time the distillery caught on fire and the whiskey barrels, I guess, burned and the whiskey ran down the river on fire. Mm-hmm. I don't know what year that was, but I remember well it happening.
Must have been frightening.
I guess
was. Was there a lot of explosion and all that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember Mr. Moore?
Oh, yes, I remember him well.
Well, could you give us a little description of him?
Mr. Tom Moore. He was just a real Southern gentleman. And his son was Conmore, who later married Muriel. His first wife was a sister of Ms. John T. McGinnis, Baldwin. And, but Mr. Tom Moore, and then he restored that little brick house right there as you go across the field, the little house on the left. And we didn't have the field at that time. And that little house there, and he married a lovely lady the second time. And I can't think of her name, but she came to our garden club. And they restored that little house there and lived in it. After he died, she lived there. He had, Mr. Tom Moore had Conmore, that's Cornelius, and now, you know, I don't want to get the Edens and the Moors and the people mixed up. I can't remember. His son had married an Eden whose home was what we would call the Kennett place out in Maple Hill where Carl Pash and his wife lived. Well, that was Mr., I believe, Mr. Henry Eden. And Mr. Henry Edelman's daughter, married. Now I'm thinking about Dick Edelman. There was Dick Edelman and R.H. Edelman, who lived down there on South 3rd Street in that big house that
Dr. Harry Spaulding.
On the other street. Dr. Forsey.
Oh, yes.
Now that was our age. That was the Kelly home.
Yes, right.
Mr. Kelly.
So all these Bardstown families are so intermarried.
Yeah,
it is
right.
Really hard to
that's
separate
right.
The families.
I wrote when Sabina Guthrie died. I wrote Newman a letter, and I said, Newman, I'm one of the few people left that knew both sets of your grandparents. And Mr. John S. Kelly, who was Jack Kelly's grandfather, and they lived down there where Dr. Forsey lives. And Mrs. Kelly, Sabina's mother, was a second wife. Sabina and her brother, Bethel Kelly. And I can see Ms. Kelly now. I don't imagine you remember Sabina's mother, but she was a lovely, regal lady, and she walked Mr. Kelly all the time on her arm, and of course he was a very fine attorney. And then the first children, the Kelly children, were Victor and John S. Kelly, and they had a sister who died young, and I think she's the one that married Dick Edelman, who was Mr. Henry Edelman's daughter.
Were all these people involved in distilling? Were any of them, or most of those were?
I think the Edelmans were all involved in distilling. And
did they work for the Moore Distillery?
I don't know if they did. I don't know who worked where.
Mattingly Moore.
Now, I don't know who that Magnum was. And, honey, we had saloons down on Main Street.
Well, tell us about those saloons now, because
well,
we can't get a picture of them.
Well, the Old Tub Saloon, the Stephen Foster Hotel now was called It was called the Old Kentucky Home Hotel, and it had two front entrances, and the main entrance went in here.
Is that the end?
Now, where the Farmers Bank new building is now, there was the Old Kentucky Home Hotel, and it got kind of a bad reputation for paying bills back here, and two or three owners back, so they named it then the Stephen Foster Hotel. But right, and it had two front entrances, and everybody went in the front, but on the right, there was a room for the drummers to display their wares. Bardstown was quite a center. Louisville used to come to Bardstown to buy their. Outside of the hotel, there was a saloon there, and they had big windows. And now one of the saloons was called the Old Tub Saloon. Now I've forgotten who owned it or which. And then right down beyond what is now the People's Bank Building and where the Louisville store is, there was another saloon, and I forget the name of it. But my father bought that building. It's the Louisville store building now. And he bought that building. And at different times, Robert Stiles and Ogden had pool rooms in there. But it had been a former saloon. And Mr. Boblett, Barbara Boblett's father, Mr. Ed Boblett, operated one of these saloons. I don't know which one. And when Barbara ran off and married Viola Boblett, Mr. Ed Boblett was Viola's father, and they lived down there where the Ernest Fulton lived. And Barbara's grandfather, of course, was Mr.
Jack Beam.
Jack Beam. Yeah, Mr. Jack Beam. And so, Mother has it in her scrapbook. Daughter of distillery owner runs off to marry at 16 to marry her childhood sweetheart, son of a saloon keeper. And Mr. John Shawnee was Mr. Jack Beam's right hand man at the distillery. And Mr. Shawnee was her guardian. And of course, they did everything they could to keep her. But she ran off and married Bill, went across Jeffersonville. And that is another thing. We had a ferry down here that crossed the river to Jeffersonville, and somebody in Bardstown, I can't think who it was, heard that one of the children run off, and they came to Louisville flying, and the ferry pulled out just ahead of them. They were up here on the bank. That hadn't got a thing to do with whiskey. But anyway,
it's all entangled.
Those saloons right there, everything's entangled, but there was, I remember a saloon right to the left, north of the Stephen Foster Hotel, and then the one right down here along about where the Louisville store is now.
Did they come on down the block?
Called them saloons. They are the only two I remember when I was a little girl.
Well, did the girls stay away from that side of town and walk down the other side of the street?
I don't recall.
I've heard that.
I don't recall that.
Tell me something about Mr. Jack Beam. Was he Mr. Jim Beam's first cousin, or was
they,
that?
They weren't closely related.
But there was a relation.
There was a relationship.
But they were in two different distilleries, is this correct?
Well, Mr. Jim Beam had the distillery at there at Nazareth that we called, can't think of the name of that distillery.
Bourbon Springs.
Bourbon Springs?
Bourbon Springs, maybe it was.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, when they sold these things, now this was where Will Stiles got his start. They sold the warehouses and tore them down. And they had all this wonderful lumber. And, of course, sold them cheap to get them torn down. And I guess Will Stiles bought one or two of those. But Mr. and Ms. Jim Beam lived out there on the left side of that Nazareth Road as you go round. Back there, there was back off the road, about as far as from here at that tall building, and they lived out there at one time. when Mr. Beam ran that distillery.
Do you remember Mrs. Beam?
Oh, honey, we lived next door to him.
Oh, really?
On North 3rd Street.
Well, what's her name? May?
May.
May Montgomery Beam?
May Manis.
Mannix.
Have all that
fresh, eh? Oh, my goodness.
Ah!
My Lord. Mr. Jim Beam.
Yeah.
And his wife, and
yeah.
They lived close to
yeah,
you.
Next door.
And so you knew them pretty well.
Yeah. I'll tell you a cute story, too, about Mr. Beam, if you want to record it.
We do.
Well, you go and record him.
It's on.
Mr. Beam had a colored man that drove for him, Lum Logan, I believe. And Mr. Beam chewed tobacco. And Lum would be up front, and Mr. Beam sitting up front. Mr. Beam would spit a wad of tobacco out the door. He'd say, "May, did that hit you?"
Gosh.
So one day, Mr. Beam wanted to come down here to an ostrich path that used to live in Birdstown. And so Lum was sick that day, couldn't come. And Ms. Davis, who lived on the corner where Freddie lives now, I think, she said, "Mr. Beam, maybe Mildred would drive you," and my mother died in the meantime, and so he came over and asked me, and I said, "Yes, I'll be glad to." So I just tooled that Cadillac right down the road, and we went to the Astor Pass and came back home. And Mr. Beam had his clothes made at Angelucci's and Ringo in Lexington, which were the foremost tailors of that time. Mr. Beam was a large man, and he started having his pants cut this way, you know, like they do now, where your pants pocket goes in this way instead of way down here, you know. And so we were living at the Samuels place and had a big double two-car garage built onto the back. So I had my washing machine out there, and I made soap all the time. We cooked so many hams and had so much grease, and Mother always made soap. And she had two square enamel pans. So I was making, Ms. Beam, Ms. Davis were over there, and we were stirring, and when you first put the lye in the water, why, it bubbles. So some of it bubbled up and hit Mr. Beam's pants and made some little pinholes. The next day, Mr. Beam said, "May, I wish you'd look at my pants on my new suit." His Beam said, "If you'd been home where you belonged, you wouldn't have." And Mr. Beam was a very forceful man, but I don't think he ever got anything off Ms. Beam. And
good,
she was
her.
Such a darling. She was so dear. And then Margaret Beam, her daughter, lived next door to Sue Anna in Springfield.
Correct.
And is still living in that house.
Yes,
so, now next. I don't remember any other characters.
Well, tell us about some of the other distillers in town. What about Mr. Guthrie?
Mr. Lewis Guthrie, he worked out at Early Times Distillery for he started with Mr. Beam out there, and then Mr. Shawnee was manager, and then Mr. Guthrie, and then Mr. Guthrie, and about four or five men, Mr. Guthrie and Harlan Mathis and maybe Will Stiles, four or five men, built what they call Fairfield Distillery right there on the Bloomfield Road by the railroad. And now there's no distillery there, but I think just a warehouse or two.
That's right. And the Browns owned the distilling, though, for Early Times, didn't they? Did
J.T.S. Brown, mm-hmm. Creel Brown.
Yes.
Yes, uh-huh. J.T.S. Brown and Creel's wife, Leela, and I finished high school together, and she still lives down here out at Anchorage. And Creel named his daughter Joanne Thomas Street Brown, so she would be J.T.S. Brown.
We have their coat of arms at the at the museum. Tell me about this Mr. Shawnee. I hear his name mentioned so often,
well,
and I'm not sure of him.
Mr. Shawnee, I can see him now. When I was a little girl and we lived there 2 miles from town where Tubby Hayden and Margaret live now, I'd drive my pony cart around Magruder Bend. Do you all know where Magruder Bend is? Where the lake was for a while. and that you go down by the old swimming pool and under the trestle.
Yes.
And up the hill and around Magruder Bend. And then we turned up there and on out to Bloomfield Road. Well, then they changed that and built the Bloomfield Road on down by Wickland. You used to go into Wickland from down there on the Bloomfield Springfield Road. There's a gate there now. You used to go in that way, but then they built the road the other way and they closed that entrance, but I think eventually they'll open that up.
Maybe, because they're going to have more traffic down there with Barstown Village.
But I remember...
Well, tell me about Mr. Shawnee.
I remember Mr. Shawnee. They had that house up on North 3rd Street where Jerry Durham used to live, and Ms. John Newman and her husband built that house. When Ms. Newman died, Sally Newman, I was working at the Standard, and I said, Libs Fallon says that she built the house, the Elmer Grigsby house, and then she built the Samuel's house on the corner next to it. I said, and Libs, she built the, what we call the Shawnee house. Oh, no, Libs said. I said, no, now, Mildred, you mixed up about the, about 2 days. See, and I knew what I was talking about. About 2 days later, Lib said, Mildred, you were right about that. Said, Ms. Newman did build that house. I said, well, I knew it all the time, but you didn't. And so Mr. and Ms. Shawnee lived there, and they didn't have any children. And he had one of the first cars in the county, and my father did too. And I would drive my pony cart to school and come around that bend. And at that bend, they had a big sign said, you had a horn on your car, that big brass horn you did this way, and they were called klaxon, K-L-A-X-O-N or T-O-N. And so there was a sign, sound klaxon, going around the bend, you know. And I'd be coming to town to school, or home from school, and Mr. Shawnee would be going the other way. And he'd take a wide curve there, you know. And I remember telling my daddy, I met Mr. Shawnee this morning or this afternoon down there on Magruder Bend, and he was way off inside the road. And I didn't like it, but he's a big man. My mother has a picture of him in her scrapbook, one of those scrapbooks that the Hardens bought from me. Mm-hmm. And when they adopted her nephew, they called him Jody Thorpe. Was his name before they, and then they called him Jody Shawnee, and then I think he went back to the Thorpe.
And Jody's father.
Yeah.
Who's well father? Now, how about Jack and Jody Thorpe's father?
Yeah, that's right.
How was he into distilling? Did he work with?
No, he didn't work with them.
He did not.
He just lived with the Shawnees.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that maybe he was spoiled. I don't know. And he married young. Catherine Boone, and so anyway.
Well, let's see, what else do we want to ask you? Can you remember the city and county officials at that time during this prohibition time that maybe would have had a hard time keeping, in quote,
law and
order?
I just really don't.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember any occasions when there were severe happenings around drinking a certain moonshine? Do you remember people getting ill, or do you remember any of those circumstances?
I really don't.
Mm-hmm.
I remember different people, and they argued they couldn't make a living if they didn't make moonshine. Well, of course, they could. They could make a living now. One night, Milton Metz had on a program about tobacco. I said, my father was a farmer and he raised tobacco, but he always said, I don't use it, I just raise it for the other fella. But I said, don't tell me that farmers can't make a living without raising tobacco, because I know good and well they could. They could have sweet corn and let the housewives know when it'd be ready for their freezers. And they could have, I said, don't tell me, I know they could make a living without tobacco. It was just, they just thought they couldn't. Have changed the pace. You see, we don't want to change. And we don't want anybody to tell us what we can and can't do.
Exactly. And we want to make a lot of money fast.
Oh, yes.
That's one of the problems. Well, can you tell me about Washington County? What was happening in Washington County when all this was going on? Do you remember?
Well, I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I remember when whiskey came back, the people that had the whiskey stores was Hal Dean Campbell.
Yes.
And Al Campbell, his brother, married Polly Yankee, and they moved to Bardstown and had a whiskey store right along up there by the Louisville store, right along in there where there was a finance company. And they had a whiskey store there, and Uncle Joe Hurst had one. And there's one down that side street, and lots of them. And I always, and then Bill Beam had one right there by his grocery. And I say all the time, I'm not prejudiced about it, and my mother wasn't, and I thought anything she did was absolutely all right. And I remember one time I stopped at Ice's grocery, and there was a man going in Bill Beam's liquor store, and there was a guy wire on the telephone pole there. And this man said to his little boy, about 6 years old, said, "You stand right there now and hold to that wire, and Daddy will be right back." So he went in the whiskey store, of course, and got his bottle and came out, took the little boy's hand, and away they went. But as I said, like many other things, I eat too much. And you might as well abuse the whiskey. It doesn't make you quite as crazy as eating too much, but sometimes there's maybe I always qualify everything. I think I knew it wouldn't take long for me to tell you everything I know.
You think that's about it?
I believe that's about it.
Mary, do you have any questions?
No, I think that's a real fine job.
Wonderful. I was just trying to think if there's any other families. Could you tell us anything about the Samuels family? Now, you know, they were many, many years and still are into the making of Maker's
Yeah,
Mark.
Yeah. Well, of course, his distillery was down Deatsville.
Yes.
And after the war then, they came back, and Mr. Beam and Mr. Samuels lived side by side in big houses, big columns. And Mr. Samuels built those warehouses at Deatsville that are shaped like this.
Yes.
And Mr. Beam said, "Now, Leslie, the whiskey will not cure. You know, you have to have the barrels turned a certain way in the warehouse. Mm-hmm. And the warehouses have to be built in certain directions." And I've heard Ms. Beam tell that said Jim told Mr. Samuels that they wouldn't work that way. But then, I guess it did.
They're still using them, I believe.
Still using them. Well, I don't guess anybody's making whiskey anymore, are they? Barton is making whiskey, I reckon.
Barton's making whiskey. Heaven Hill is making whiskey. Maker's Mark is making some whiskey.
Yeah.
And, of course, Beam has even started their Boston plant again.
Have they really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, for a while they said people were drinking scotch and other things and vodka, and they weren't drinking bourbon.
Well, I don't think they're drinking like they once were. I don't think that is true. But they're still making it, and they have opened some markets now, big markets in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So that's changing things.
Yeah.
There was a distillery out 62 right outside the edge of town called Walker. Walker Distillery.
Yes, the Walker Distillery. That was on Shohan Lane, I think, the Walker Distillery, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, they say there was one right out where the old state garage is, or was.
Yes, maybe
several years ago.
Yeah.
And what about the one down below the hill? Not too many people seem to know about that.
I didn't know about it. I remember the Walker Distillery there. I remember the name being familiar, but I don't know where it was. Mm-hmm. Now, there's Withrow Distillery. When you went out of Bardstown on the train, and see, I came to Louisville every Wednesday and Saturday for a full year on the train, and the conductor would say, "Withrow," and that was the first distillery out of Bardstown. And then the next one, I guess, was Claremont.
Mm-hmm, yes.
That was Beams. And then we got down to Chappies.
Mm-hmm.
And the ladies would all get on in the mornings that worked in the bottling house to go to the distillery, and then in the afternoon we came back, they'd go. And one time I was driving Louisville along down there by Burnham Distillery, and I saw a sign that said Chappies, and it just turned off the road and drove down that way. And they had the prettiest little buildings, and they were right on the railroad when I was a little girl. I don't know what they were that day I saw them. And then there was all the stations. Captain Summers was the conductor on that train. And this is another thing about Mr. Jim Beam. He walked down every morning to the train, and he got there by Wilson Motel just when the train was stopping. And they, of course, would hold it for him if he wasn't there. And he'd get on. Captain Summers was the thing. And they'd call all those stations, Belmont, Withrow, Chappies, all of them. And of course,
can you tell me anything about the Chappies? Do you know any of those people that ran that?
No, except they were just pretty little English-style buildings, and right there on the railroad.
They had that little Tudor-style stop.
Have you ever been down to Chappies?
Yes, yes, they're my relatives.
Are they?
They're all gone.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Well,
let's see. Have we pretty well covered all the discussion?
How did it change people? I was wondering, you know, how do you think it changed people?
Mm-hmm. Well, I really don't know. I don't.
Were people pretty moral then, or did it change people the way they thought?
Well, I think they used to say that somebody would meet a bootlegger and get a load of whiskey, and before he got out on the Louisville Road, why, they had arranged for somebody to hold him up and steal it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know whether those tales were true or not.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember anything about bankruptcies, people losing everything? Did it feel severe?
No, I really don't.
Nobody was that hungry, or Bardstown didn't just fold up.
Well, I tell you what, during the Depression, Mr. Ben Johnson was state highway commissioner, and he kind of took care of the Bardstown people, and they had jobs on the highway. And I will tell you this little story about Will Stiles. I don't know where Will lived, and then he bought the place on the corner where the bonded gasoline place is.
Was that Keith Croom's home?
No, it was Keith Croom's office later.
Later.
But the people that lived there were old Mr. and Ms. Haviland, Chuck Haviland's family, and Ms. Kate Lewis's parents, and Ms. Pearl Tuttle's family, parents, and Mr. Chuck Haviland. I don't know whether any other children or not. And anyway, old Mr. Haviland had a little grocery right on the corner of the lot, and then their house set back, little old house, and Lucy Lewis, who was Kate Haviland Lewis's daughter, and I were great friends, Christine and Richard, the three, and they live there on Broadway. I understand that they're going to take off that porch. Well, the house didn't. Somebody said it always had a porch. I said, I have a Kodak picture of it. And you just walk right up the steps, the screen door. And Freeman Carruthers lived right across the street where the Browns did live. And now the, can't call the name right on the album.
Goffs.
And Freeman was a baby, and I was with Lucy Lewis all the time, and Mary Lewis, her first cousin, Mr. and Ms. Will Lewis's daughter and only child, died during the flu epidemic. But I had Kodak pictures of us out in the yard, and Lucy and Eleanor Arnold, who lived where Hearst lives now, and we were holding Freeman Carruthers, he's a baby. And when Freeman's son married, Jimmy. He and Betty Wood went to school together. I took these Kodak pictures of Freeman down to him. And Freeman Carruthers' father always wore overalls, Fat Jim. We used to have the county fair out there north of town at Nazareth, where the road goes down. That was the Nelson County Fairgrounds, and we had the best men in the state, and they showed the babies. And my prettiest babe, you know, and Fat Jim Carruthers showed Freeman. Everybody just scream and holler, give it to the man, give it to the man. And of course, Freeman got this thing for the prettiest baby.
Oh, that's so cute.
And you know, I was telling Beverly and H.D., Robert Stiles' son, daughter, only niece and nephew I had, about when their father ran Joyland out to Fairground. Well, they said, Mildred, I've never heard of it. I said, well, Lord, I don't plan to go back to Bardstown anymore, but I'm going to have to go and find somebody that knew when Robert had the kind of a nightclub out there on the Nazareth Road where the ham place is now. That was part of it, and he opened a nightclub out there. It was called Joyland. Well, H.D. and Beverly, neither one ever heard of it. Well, you see, I've let them all get away now. Now, Louise Simpson might know about it, and B.B. Sisko might know about it. But I'm going to have to find somebody knows about that so I can tell the children there's one of Robert's escapades. My brothers were always into something.
They sound like they were very enterprising.
They were.
Well, what about Mr. Will?
Will Stiles. Now, Will Stiles, honey, he could trade you out of your eye teeth. But he was the most charitable person, and Broadway wasn't paved then, and they lived there where the filling station is now. Will bought that house and remodeled it, and honey, it was the last word. Mm-hmm. I remember him showing us through it, and he was so proud of it. And when you opened the closet door, the light came on. And they had a back porch, screen porch, and they had a refrigerator that you could put the ice in from on the porch, and then the refrigerator was into the kitchen. I'd never known anybody else.
Well, now, how did he make his money?
Well, now there's a question. I think he and this man that was taking the whiskey out of the warehouse, I think they were in cahoots. But anyway, one winter, I guess during the Depression, Will Stiles had a carload of coal unloaded right there beside of his house. And anybody in town that wanted to get buckets and buckets of coal, that was for them.
Mm.
And
did a lot of good.
Lots of good. And Nanny Stiles was a rapier. She and Tate Spallin were sisters, and they lived down there where Ellen and Ferd Rapier lived. That was where Nanny's people lived when I remember them. And Nanny and Leon and E. Crow over at New Haven, and I've forgotten who else her family was. But there was never
Steve.
Steve, was that one of her brothers? Mm-hmm. There never was a finer woman in Bardstown than Nanny Stiles.
I know she reared some grandchildren.
Yeah. Yes, she did. Yes. Jack was around her. But anyway, she was a fine, fine person.
Well, was Will involved with Mr. Guthrie in some of their enterprises?
I don't know whether. I know they were close friends. Mm-hmm. And is this on recorder? One time, Will and Louis Guthrie had stayed out all night playing cards, I think. And Nanny and Miss Guthrie, what was her name? I won't call her Mamie, but Amy Guthrie. Nanny. So Nanny Stiles never did know how to drive, but Miss Guthrie did. So they were mad because the husbands were out all night, I guess, playing cards and so forth. So they just said they'd go to Florida. So they just stopped down at the bank and got a little money and took off. So somebody saw Will or Louis Guthrie one on the street and said, when's your wife coming home? Said, I don't know, I haven't heard from her. And the next two or three days, they asked Louis Guthrie or Will one, said, when are the women coming home? Said, well, they called the night before last. They didn't say anything about coming home the next day. So said, well, I just don't know when they coming home, but said they took enough money with them to stay all winter. And we just don't know when they're coming home. So
And you know, I love women that are independent.
Well, tell us about the banks.
The banks. Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Guthrie came into the Farmers Bank and worked there, and there were never more popular people. You see, this is, I wrote Newman. They were living next door to me when Newman was born. And I wrote Newman a letter, and I just had it ready to thank you from him. But I was a little surprised that he didn't say, and I told him that they were living next door to me when he was born, and Ms. Kelly took care of him, and Sabina went to work for the REA when it was in the little brick building that Charles McCoy owns when it first came to town. And I can't think of the man's name that had it, but lovely couple. Anyway, Sabina worked for REA, and Ms. Kelly took care of Newman. And in the afternoons, the Western Sun and Ms. Kelly put the baby out in the shade of the house in the playpen. And I had young men roomed at my house, and we could see him out the window, you know, and I'd go get him. And one of the men would say, Ms. Brunson, are you going to get the baby? And so I went over, and I never thought to holler and tell Ms. Kelly. And Sabina, I guess, got home and the baby wasn't there. And where's the baby? Well, he's out. And it wasn't times like this, you know. And called, Mildred, have you got the baby? I said, yes, he's over here in the men just playing with this time, you know. But you see, it seems to me like by Newman being so alone in the world for his family, and Bethel, his mother's brother, died, and seems like